Okay, good afternoon, everybody.
Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Hola. Hola, everybody. Hola. I love that word. All right, welcome to the a workshop today, the disease concept. Dr. Hanks is going to do this thing. It's just great. You know, a good meeting starts on time and ends on time. What a breeze starting this on time, right, Matthew? Perfect. It's amazing how this one came together. But this is not really an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's a workshop, and it's going to be about the disease concept of alcoholism. So, you know, if somebody says a word to me, like say they say Irish. They say the word Irish. I have a set of principles, a set of elements that goes with that word. You know, like shamrocks and leprechauns and Guinness. You know, but if I say alcoholic, there's another set of elements that goes with that, you know, and we think about fear, doubt, and insecurity, you know, well, there's a whole lot of, I'm sharing my elements, you keep your elements to yourself, but what Dr. Hanks is going to talk about is the disease of alcoholism, and it's a whole different ball of wax, so no further ado, Dr. Hanks.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate the kind introduction. And how about a hand for Matthew? A word for Matthew, we wouldn't have this. I am really excited to be here. I'll tell you the reason I'm so excited. You're the first live audience I've had in a long time. I come from Florida, and I'm retired. That was not supposed to be a joke, but I, Florida is also known as God's waiting room. Anyway, I do a lot of TV there. I don't have any live audiences, so nobody falls asleep, spills their coffee, starts snoring. So it's great to have this audience interaction. We're going to talk about alcohol and drugs today. My wife is here, and if I were silly enough to give her this microphone, which I'm not going to do, she would gladly give you her views on TV, which she calls the plug-in drug. And that relates back to a story that happened in our family, good God, 32 years ago when my son Dan was 10. And I was feeling rather grandiose, and I said, look, son, tell you what. You made it through one decade. Old Dad will get you anything you want for your birthday one time. He says, anything? I said, well, son, within reason. He says, Dad, there's a lot of goodies on TV, all kinds of toys and stuff I got to think about. See, Danny was a TV addict. He watched TV all the time. We didn't know any better. I don't even think we subscribed to the TV guide because he had it memorized. He says, Dad, I got to think about this. I'll let you know at dinner. I said, fine. Dinner time rolled around. I says, son, you decide what you want. He says, remember, Dad, you said, even if I see it on TV. I said, Danny, what do you want? He says, Dad, I would like a Tampax. I said, what? Danny, a Tampax? I said, Danny, do you know what a Tampax is? He says, no, Dad, I don't know what it is. All I know, you got one of those things, you could do just about anything. You go swimming, you go horseback riding, you can play tennis. No. Well, yeah. You laugh, but my wife has pulled the plug. Okay. And I don't have any TV. And when Monday Night Football, I go into withdrawal. Okay. Very bad. Okay, now, while I show you this, that's my Gmail. If you would like a copy of these slides, I will gladly send them to you by email. And we have some papers up here afterwards, and I will show this slide again at the end. You can copy it down. You're welcome to have the slides. Do whatever you want with them. But you got to send me the email. And please don't send it before October 21st. And because I won't be there to get it yet. So, you know, when I talk with audience, I always like to know what somebody's credentials are. You know, whether so these are my credentials. And the important word there, we don't have a pointer, but the important word there is emeritus. That comes from the Latin verb miere, which means to move. And E is kind of like E for exit, like to move out. Okay? So, like in to move out to when you get retired, they move you out to pasture. So I am a pasteurized kind of guy. And that's what it means. Now, when I talk about addiction, I talk about alcoholism and any other drug dependency. And we call that whole thing chemical dependency. Do you all have those game shows on TV over here? You know, The Price is Right and those kinds of things? No, you don't have those. Okay. So anyway, let's talk about the chemical part of chemical dependency. A chemical is addictive if it alters your mind and changes your mood. It also must be reinforcing. What that means is taking the drug promotes and provokes taking more of the drug. And let us not forget, ethyl alcohol is a drug. It's America's favorite way to fly. So we're talking about alcohol and other drugs. Now, it must have one more criterion, which is it has to be euphorogenic. That is to say, it has to produce intense pleasure. Now, this is a little confusion for some people. If you're depressed way down here and I give you an antidepressant, bring you way back up here, that alters your mind and changes your mood. Okay? If you are a manic flying along 9,000 miles an hour and I give you lithium to bring you back down to normal speed, that alters your mind and changes your mood. If you are seeing things and hearing things that aren't there and I give you an antipsychotic and bring you back to reality, that alters your mind and changes your mood. But none of those is addicting because they're not reinforcing and they're not euphorogenic. So, let's talk about the chemical classes. The first class are the opioids. We used to call these narcotics. Things like heroin, morphine, Demerol, Dilaudid, Percodan, Toluen, Methadone, and the list goes on. Then we have the sedatives, of which ethyl alcohol is the prototype, the very first sedative known to mankind. Then we had the barbiturates. Some of us are in a room old enough to remember those, like David. Nothing personal. I don't remember those. Amitol, Tuinol, Secanol, anything at all. And then we have the group called the stimulants. Well, let's go back, talk about some of the other set of hypnotics. The benzodiazepines, Librium, Valium, Xanax, Ativan, Cyrax, and so forth. And there was a few others. Then we have the stimulants, of which cocaine is the big one. All the amphetamines, Ritalin, Preludin, Sylert, and then nicotine and caffeine. All stimulants. And then we have the perceptual disorders. LSD, PCP, mushrooms, mescaline, all these things that give you weird things they used way back in the 60s. Then marijuana in all of its forms. And then again, we have this last group called inhalants. Those of you old enough to remember typewriters? Remember the little whiteout stuff when we make a mistake? Okay, the kids used to sift that stuff, you know. And the kids that have whiteouts, we alcoholics have blackouts, but they have whiteouts. All right, so every drug has a rank. Okay, not all drugs are the same rank. They're not as potent. Some are more potent than others. Who knows the most addicting thing, drug known to mankind? Who wants to help me out here? Sugar. maybe. What else? Nicotine. That's the hardest one to quit. Sex. Okay. Good. No, the drug. Viagra. That's an interesting group you got here, Tom. Okay. The most addicting drug known to mankind is cocaine. All right. And the methamphetamines. Now, there's another group called the synthetic opioids, the fentanyl group. This is a very powerful narcotic that anesthesiologists use for big-time major surgery, like trauma surgery, chest surgery, heart surgery, and so forth. And we're arguing in addiction medicine, which is one and which is two, one, two, two, one. But those are the most addicting. Then heroin. Then the minor opioids. These are the pills. These are the codeine and the Vicodin, the hydrocodone, the Oxycontin, and Percocets, and things like that. That was propofol. Yeah, it's one of the synthetic opioids. Okay, then alcohol. Then the other stimulants, or the other sedatives rather. Then the other stimulants. Then the perceptual disorders. Then marijuana, and then caffeine. So, if you take 100 people, put them in a room, give them all cocaine, about 90 of them are going to get hooked. You put 100 people in a room, you give them alcohol, about 10 of them are going to get hooked. Okay? So you have to have three things. You have to have the drug and how potent it is. Then you have to have the individual, the host, and that depends how vulnerable they are. And that is mostly contingent upon how much genetic predisposition. And the last thing you have to have is the vector. Is how is the drug delivered to the system? Is it very slow through orally, or is it faster if you inject it, or is it ultra-fast if you snort it directly up your nose or inhale it? So you have to have all three things in order for this thing called addiction to happen. Well, that's interesting information, but let's look at this. The number of people in the United States, America, who die each day from illegal drugs, heroin, cocaine, marijuana, are about 10 a day. Now, the number of people who die each day in America from alcohol related drugs is 400 a day. Now, there's some aviators in the group. How many 747s would have to crash in a row before the FAA would say, "Oop, stop. Stop flying that plane till we figure out what's causing"? How many? One today and one tomorrow. And then they would say, "Stop." Okay? But 400 people die a day from alcohol-related deaths. Now, there's one more drug that kills. It's actually not 1,000. It's about 1,200 a day. Who knows what that is? Yeah, nicotine. Tobacco. All right? So the message from this slide is, it's the legal drugs that's killing everybody. All right, now, we've talked about the chemicals. Let's now talk about the dependency part. This is the hard part to understand. And we define the dependency by using what we call the three C's. And the first three C is loss of control. Unfortunately, that's a very poor choice of words because it implies alcoholics and addicts are always out of control. Quite to the contrary. They're very much in control. In fact, they're the most controlled people I've ever seen in my entire life. They can titrate within milligrams per cent how much cocaine to snort, heroin to inject, marijuana to smoke, and alcohol to drink, and function quite well. That's why they're so hard to find. They're functioning well. They're not underneath some bridge, okay? That's not the prototype. That's 1, 2%, 3% of alcoholics and addicts. Most of them are functioning in everyday jobs. They're flying airplanes. They're doing surgery. They're making executive decisions behind desks. They're driving trucks. They're picking oranges. They're doing all kinds of things. Some of them are even chemists. And, you know, I mean, this is really a ubiquitous disease. I mean, just everybody gets it. That's a poor choice of words. A better choice would be loss of predictability. The alcoholic cannot predict three things once faced with the drug, alcohol. One, whether or not he or she will drink. Two, if they do drink, how much they drink. And three, what behavior will follow. They cannot predict those three things. Example, it's Friday night, like tonight. Everybody's had a hard day at work. Harry and his buddies are getting ready to get off work. His buddy said, "Harry, let's go down to the pub, have a couple of beers." He said, "No way, guys. Come on, we're going down to the pub, happy hour, have a couple of beers before we go home." "No way, my old lady's already talking to me now. That's what you said last Friday night." "Harry, this is this Friday night. We're going down and have two beers. Are you coming or not? You guys promise?" "Yep, we promise." So down to the pub they go. They have two. Harry has two. Everybody goes home. No problem. Next Friday night, same thing. Third Friday night, same thing. Fourth Friday night, they have two. Harry has two. Harry looks at his watch. "Guys, we got time for one more." And they say, "By golly, Harry, you're right." And they have one more. But Harry has 21 more. He closes a joint at 2 in the morning, and he gets a DUI on the way home. And when he gets there, his wife is not waiting for him because she is sick and tired of the unpredictability. She never knows on what Friday night that's going to happen. And you know what? Neither does Harry. That's what we mean by loss of control. The second C is what we call compulsive use. Now, a compulsion is an irrational, repetitive act that is done despite your best intention not to do it. It arises from a cluster of thoughts, a whole bunch of thoughts, but behaviorists like to think of this cluster of thoughts as a single omnipotent thought, omnipotent, all-powerful thought, so powerful that it's more powerful than other very powerful thoughts we have. They're called prepotent thoughts. Most of the time, most of us occupy planet Earth. We are preoccupied with acquisition of food, water, sex, shelter, and clothing. some in a little different order than that, but nevertheless, that's how it goes. You put a needle in a monkey's arm, tape it in place, hook it up to a cocaine supply, and all the monkey's got to do is press the lever, get the shot of cocaine, and you deprive that monkey of food, water, and a sexual mate, and later reintroduce them back into the cage, the monkey will ignore all three of those and continue to press the lever until the cocaine supply is exhausted or until the monkey's exhausted. The drug becomes numero uno. Everything revolves around acquisition of, ingestion of, and the consequences of the drug use. That's what we mean by compulsion and a compulsive use. Now, if you hear nothing else I say this afternoon, please hear this. What those two things say is that the alcoholic or addict does not drink or drug the way they do because they want to. They drink or drug the way they do because they have to. Now, that's a lot to swallow. No pun intended. That's the hard part to understand. Are you trying to tell me that they don't have the choice whether or not to drink? Yep. That's exactly what I'm trying to tell you. No, I'm not meaning in the beginning. In the beginning, alcoholics and addicts have the choice whether or not they pick up that first drink, line, needle, joint, or whatever. But once this disease becomes clinically manifest, that is to say, it pops up. You can see the flower, once it gets over, above the ground. Once that happens, and how do we know when it's clinically manifest? Because it has identifiable signs and symptoms in laboratory tests, which I'll talk about in a minute. But once that happened, the word choice goes out their vocabulary. They can stop, but they can't stay stopped. When I hear that word choice, I'm reminded of flying someplace one time, and I got upgraded to first class. And I'm sitting over here on this side of the aisle, and there's two clergymen sitting over here on this side of the aisle. And the flight attendant comes back and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, we're about to push back now. We'll be up airborne pretty soon. I'm going to take drink orders now." And she went to the first reverend and said, "Reverend, would you like an alcoholic beverage?" And he said, "Alcoholic beverage? He says, "Unaccustomed as I am, I was just starting my vacation. I'm going on holiday, and I was about to take off my white collar. I tell you what, I'll make an exception. Bring me a double martini." So she went to the reverend by the window, whose religious persuasion was such that all drinking was mortally sinful, and said, "Reverend, would you like an alcoholic beverage?" He said, "Are you kidding me?" She said, "I would rather commit adultery." And the first reverend grabbed her arm and said, "Just a minute, ma'am. I didn't realize we had a choice." Okay. So.